Hello everyone, welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Zhifei Li, founder and CEO of Chinese artificial intelligence company Mobvoi. I spoke with Li, a former Google research scientist, 2 weeks ago in Beijing, and asked him why did his company get into the hardware business like smartwatches and smart speakers. We also talked about how he thinks a Chinese AI company ought to do to survive and thrive. Please remember to visit our website at www.chinamoneynetwork.com to read our article and also watch a video program of my visit to its Beijing headquarters. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, Zhifei. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Start from when did you realize that artificial intelligence is going to be something you want to study, research, or even start a company in?
Back in 2005, when I go to Johns Hopkins to do my PhD study, so this, I think, voice recognition is going to be very useful when you human try to interact with a machine, because that's really the natural way that people interact with people, right? So back then, I was so curious why a machine can recognize a human voice and have an interaction. So then I began to study economic understanding, machine translation, speech recognition, all those AI-related subjects.
To 2005, your focus has been on artificial intelligence, especially voice recognition, NPL, and all those. So it was natural for you to go into this sector when you started Mobvoi in China in 2012.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about that initial stage when you started the company, especially also with the backing from Google where you worked.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I got my PhD in 2010 from Johns Hopkins. And then I joined Google Research in Mountain View. I was working on Google Translate. So basically, we are trying to develop an algorithm automatically translate the language for different country, right? So back then, mobile phone began to popular. So
yeah, that's the height of the mobile internet,
right,
stage.
So I think this is really the opportunity to redefine the next generation of human-computer interaction, because before that we are mainly using a touch or keyboard, but on mobile phone those two methods are not that convenient, while using voice is much more convenient. So I realized this is really a great potential to start a business, especially in China. There are so many people. So then I went back to China in 2012, start to doing the startup.
Did you already talk to investors like Google and also Gen Fund, so they supported you before the company was founded?
Yeah. I was very lucky for the startup, because I got the funding before Sequoia and Gen Fund at the very beginning when I founded the company.
You know, one interesting thing I read on the internet was that Google had to leave the Chinese market, and via investing in companies like yours, they're sort of coming back into the Chinese market in a way.
I can't say anything for Google, but for us, it's really because we had quite innovative product, especially for the smart wearables. We have the smartwatch, Tick Watch, and then we also have the operating system called TickWell. It's an operating system based on Android. So when Google wanted to launch the Android Wear device with Motorola in China, so they need some local partner to help them to provide the voice search engine, and we have the end-to-end product to satisfy that requirement. So that's why Google invested in us.
So when you started the company in 2012, what was the idea of the company's product and what was the strategy?
The first idea we have is to use voice recognition technology to develop applications. Then you can talk to the app, then it will just provide the answer for you. So it's kind of like Apple's theory.
So it's like a personal assistant type of product in the mobile app.
Right, it's more like a voice assistant.
Voice assistant. Mm-hmm. And then slowly your strategy shifted to hardware.
Right.
How did you make that shift?
So the main problem of the APP is that the user it's very difficult to get the user to use the APP because they have to find the APP and then click the button and then say something and then get the result. So it's quite a long process, while the voice recognition does not provide the user so much benefit, especially on mobile phone where most of the APP already had a very good interaction experience. So then we're thinking what other platform that might make voice interaction more useful for the users. So that's why we begin to think smart wearable, smart automotive kind of scenarios.
But that is entering into a brand new sector of hardware, which is very different from just engineering and research and development. During that process of entering hardware development, what are some major challenges you encountered?
Right, so you're absolutely right that switching from algorithm development or software to hardware manufacture is really a challenging process because we don't have any hardware background. So in the very first stage, we need to find the right talent who are familiar with hardware development, right? So we spend quite a lot of time to identify those talents. We are very lucky because Nokia, Beijing, they are trying to turn down their business in China. So they basically fired most of the engineers. Well, we're lucky to attract some top talent from Nokia, Beijing. And then, so once we have the talents, then the second thing is we need to understand the development cycle for hardware, because it's very different from software. For software, once you have the idea, you just develop the code and then you launch it on the internet. If it doesn't work, then you redo it, right? You can iterate very fast, but for hardware, it's for every iteration is a few months, right? So we have to change our mindset from the software mindset to hardware mindset. That's really a challenging process as well.
And also the production schedule, and also bringing to mass production capacity.
Yes.
I imagine would also be a challenge.
Yes, for the mass production, you have to have very good planning. You have very good discipline. You also need to have very good partners who can actually do this integration for you.
But when you first initially had the idea of developing a mobile app into hardware, but there are actually many different ways you could go, right? You could go potentially into building a platform. You could become a fully AI technology solutions provider. How did you debate the strategy back then?
Right. So in the very beginning, we just want to find some hardware partner so that we can just do the software and AI algorithm. They are doing the hardware. But then we realized there are not so many good hardware who are able to make good hardware, and also they are interested in integrating the AI solution into the hardware. So then we decided we should just do this software, hardware, and algorithm all together because it's just much easier for us to get into this field.
Mm. Now, looking forward, what are some sectors potentially Movoi can get into in the future? And what are some sectors that you definitely stay away from?
So in the past, we have worked on a few AI application scenarios like smart watch and smart automotive device and also smart speaker. So in the future, we will also go into smart earphone. So basically, as you can see, what our strategy is really developing the core voice interaction software and then apply them into different hardware scenarios where the voice interaction makes a lot of sense for the user, right? Like smart wearable, smart automotive, and smart speaker, they're all this kind of hardware, right? The thing we definitely, or we try to avoid going to is a smartphone because the competition is already super high. It's very difficult to change the user behavior because they already get used to touch.
How about AI chips?
AI chips? That's a totally different direction. I don't think we're going to there.
Okay, then in terms of your product line, you have the smart watch, you have the smart speaker you launched last night, and also smart rear view mirror.
Right.
What are some potentially other type of smart devices you could get into? smart wireless earphones.
Right.
Any others?
I think that cover most of the usage scenario. Basically, when you're at home, when you drive, when you're running, or when you take a subway. So all those scenarios has already been covered most of the categories I mentioned.
So when you talk about smart devices, smart homes, we cannot avoid the elephant in the room, which is Xiaomi,
mm-hmm.
Who already have a great ecosystem where their speaker can control the air conditioner, the refrigerator, supposedly some other home devices, your air purifier. So they can claim they have a complete smart home ecosystem to work with. So what would be the competitive advantage here for your company?
First of all, Xiaomi is a very strong player in China, but I don't think their smart home device will dominate the Chinese market, right? So they are still like more than 80% of the market share by device provided by other manufacturers, right? So I think we still have a lot of opportunity to compete with them. If you really want to talk about the competitive advantage, I think for us, we are an AI company. So we have the core voice in action technology, which we can iterate very fast. And we also already had a hardware scenario that applies this AI technology, right? So I think this is really the capability to combine software, hardware, AI algorithm all together. This is really the unique capability we have where Xiaomi doesn't have.
So, okay, 80% you said the market is taken up by other companies outside of Xiaomi?
Mm-hmm. That's the usual...
Oh, you mean just the 80-20 rule, right?
Right.
Oh, okay. But the rule is usually 80% of, the...
No, what I'm trying to say, for most of the hardware category, like a single player cannot dominate the whole market.
But do you see in that exactly lays a problem of the future of smart home or the IoT industry, Internet of Things industry, because of multiple platforms, multiple players, each have different entry points, and then that will make the user's experience very segmented and siloed.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, that would totally harm the user experience.
Yeah.
How would you solve that in the problem as an industry?
We don't have a good solution right now, so that's really the truth. A lot of players, and they all have their own standards, so it's quite a fragmented market. But if you just want to have some smart switch, that's much easier because this device is very easy to make. But if you want the smart device to control the air conditioner and other like TV, then it's going to be a problem. I think it will take time to solve those problems.
What's your vision of how that will turn out? Do you think one or two big players will become the dominant platform so that users can actually, get to control everything via one device? Because that's, that's supposedly is the future, is the attraction here.
I think it really depends on the maturity of the market, right? So right now, because a lot of companies just use this as a PR, they say, oh, you see, I can use voice to control my TV or air conditioner, but the user have not really adopted this in their daily life, right? So for us, we really want to push the user to adopt this device, to think, to really realize this is really useful for their life. And then, so once this the maturity of the technology and the user adoption become more and more mature, then I'm sure there's some player will emerge. Then they will try to unite the manufacturers and make the standard way to connect all those devices.
What's your outlook for the smart home or the Internet of Things sector? Do you think, how big the market will grow to?
I think it's a pretty big market because you're going to have billions of devices connected to the internet, and this device will detect your environment, they will detect your daily activity, and they can make a smart and connected decision, right? So this is really...
But it's one thing to have billions of devices connected to the internet, it's another to monetize it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some good business models do you see here?
So we today we cannot imagine business model that we do not even know what this connectivity will bring into, right? So right now it's very difficult to imagine once all those devices get connected, then what kind of application we can develop, right? It's very difficult to imagine, but think about the internet.
Sure, it's the same thing with the mobile internet.
Right.
So you
once
think
we
the
have
key,
internet.
Yeah, the key right now is to actually occupy the market, to basically grab as much devices that can be connected to your platform as possible.
Yes.
Okay, then let me turn to another aspect of your product, which is the price of the product. So we can see the smart speaker here. Actually, I don't know how much it costs. What's the price for the smart speaker?
So for this one, the normal price is $1,399.
Mm-hmm. And that compares to, sorry, I have to mention, you know, Xiaomi's
mm-hmm.
smart speaker is $299.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about 6 times more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Are you targeting the higher, you know, high-end consumers here?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's targeting two different group of people. And the quality and the music source are totally different.
So your target consumers will be the technology frenzy type of, like, you know, fans of really high-end smart devices, comparing to perhaps a mass market that companies like Xiaomi target.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You think consumers would react really positively to products like you know, a more expensively priced smart speakers?
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at the smartwatch market in China, there are also some smartwatches that only sell 200 or 300,
yeah.
right? But for this one, sell for $999, right? So, but still, we're one of the top sellers in China, right? So I think there always some people prefer no price, just try it and then throw it away. But then some other users, they really like the product, they're willing to pay for the product.
Can you share a little bit of the sales of your product so far?
So in China, we can sell about 200 to 300,000 units each year right now.
Your smartwatch.
Smartwatch,
okay.
And, but we also sell globally.
Mm-hmm.
So overseas, we can sell right now about 100,000 units, but that's only for the first year. We have never done overseas business before, and we only have one language, that's English, but later on, we're going to use Android Wear as the operating system. Then it can support a lot of language. Then it can go to all the countries in the world that mobile Android Wear support.
Mm-hmm. So during the press conference last night, it was interesting to notice that you mentioned some opinion expressed by the media here locally that
mm-hmm.
perhaps a smart speaker will go in the same fate as smartwatch, because as we know, smartwatch hasn't really fulfilled the promise that people had hoped for the sector. And I remember a few years back, I was talking to Tim Draper in Sand Hill Road, and he was proud to tell me that he, you know, invested Pebble Watch, and that company has been bankrupt already. So there's really a lot of uncertainty, and there hasn't really been a proven case.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still very optimistic.
Absolutely. A smartwatch may not be achieve the expectation that people hope to have, right? That's for sure. But if you think about, except mobile phone, what other hardware or smartwatch can have millions of sales each year? I think smartwatch or smart speaker are the only tools who actually smart. They have a really interaction with sophisticated hardware, right? So which means we should, for this new kind of category, we should really be patient. I think they already achieved good success, because Apple Watch sells 10 million a year, right? Like Amazon Echo sells more than 10 million a year. That's already huge number compared with other smart device.
Interesting. So you're going to the smart home sector in a big way. I already asked you, you know, like, would you get into smart home, like smart conditioner, smart air conditioner, and smart refrigerator, that type of devices?
No, absolutely no. We're not going to make an air conditioner. We are only making the smart speaker that is control those devices.
Okay. But you also provide AI technology solutions to other enterprises who are making perhaps those home electronic devices.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Then, now, as an AI company in China, what do you think is the right business model in terms of, you know, actually, you know, achieving revenue, potentially making the company sustainable for the long term? Because right now, every AI company in China is so searching. Everybody's trying to see, you know, how can we actually become a sustainable business? I like the way you put it yesterday, last night, of the BATs utilizing their nuclear weapon, because they're really like the, you know, the giant players here. They could crush any startup. How do you think about this dynamic?
So AI is a technology, it's not a product, not a service. So I think for AI to be successful, you have to either you first make a product, then you apply your AI into that product. That's basically what we do, right? We make the smartwatch, we make the smart speaker, we make the smart automotive device, then we apply the voice and the action as the key advantage in that product, right? So that's one way to make AI commercially successful. The other way is really you identify some partners who already have a product, and then you integrate your service into the product. So, for example, you can either collaborate with an automotive manufacturer, then trying to help them to make AI voice interaction into their car, right? So that's basically what we do with Volkswagen. Another example that AI company can collaborate with a traditional company is just like we showed last night, we had this partnership with China Resources Land. So basically, we install our device into their home and make their home really smart, and the life is really convenient for the owners.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the ways to make AI commercially successful. So I think that's the only way to for the AI startup to survive.
And that's exactly what I want to ask you next, which is your partnership with Volkswagen. You just announced plans to establish a joint venture with this German car company. We know you already have the rear view mirror product, the smart rear view mirror. What other potentially, you know, new products we can expect?
Mm-hmm. What's really behind the smart rear view mirror is really the software and the algorithm, right? So the smart rear view mirror is just the form that displays this smart interaction. So I think that's really the first step we're going to put into the car. But later on, you can imagine we can also put the software and the AI into the head unit, right? So to make the interaction more natural and more safe.
Can we say that for future Volkswagen vehicles produced in China, it could potentially be embedded with technology from Movoi to be smart just from the dashboard? And
yes.
So it would also center around voice interaction with the car,
yes.
Natural language processing, and
yes.
all those.
Yes.
And other, any other aspects?
For
the car, for the car.
I think that's...
So basically you're going to the pre-installed...
Yes.
So
I think, so as you know, the car industry is a pretty established and complex industry. So that's why for many years, it's very difficult for them to adopt a new technology because safety is the most important concern, right? So for us, I think if we're able to push our AI service into the car and actually make them useful for a lot of car users, that's already a huge success.
Okay, another key element of AI is massive amount of data. And I think companies like BAT, as you know, have natural advantage of obtaining that kind of data and actually train their systems with AI. How do you think companies like you can, you know, access those data and therefore improve the technology?
So there are two kinds of data. One are those generic purpose data. One is those specialized data. Like if you want to develop a voice search engine for smartwatch, I think we have much more data than Baidu or than other players, because we are the major voice search provider for smartwatch. I think it's also true for smart automotive device, right? Because they don't really have a device that actually used in the car. But if we are talking about a mobile, of course they have much more data than us. So I think it really depends on which scenario you want to get into. And so I think it really depends on what kind of data we are talking about. So for us, all the category we are getting into are new category, new smart hardware, right? So I think we don't have data issue here.
So lastly, let me put a question I asked many other people, and that is, for many years, everyone has been wondering who's going to be the disruptor of BAT. And I've heard answers from other people that it could be an AI company. So now I put this question to an AI CEO. Do you think, you know, the next disruptor for BAT will come from an AI company?
Absolutely. Think about that. After 5 years or 10 years, most of the devices are not mobile phone anymore. They are this kind of voice-enabled device, like us, because we have get into this market before they mature, and then we integrate the product for smartwatch, smart speakers, smart automotive device, smart earphone. All those devices are new, and they're empowered by the voice system that we developed, right? Then we can be the major player in this market, because most of the interaction you are doing are through our devices, through our software, instead of Baidu software.
Well, thank you so much, Zhifei, for your time.
No problem. Thank you very much.